This is Kids These Days.
Today, love and relationships. Valentine's Day is right around the corner, so on Kids These Days, we're talking about all the ways we love and relate to one another in our family life. Dr. Susan Newman answers listeners' questions today in the studio. Also this hour, we'll learn about Alaska Attachment and Bonding Associates, a local group that supports local families in need. Listen for teen voices this hour weighing in on love and marriage. We'll hear advice from a sourdough couple whose marriage is decades long. Plus, we debut our first installment of Chef KTD. That's all coming up today on Kids These Days. This is Kids These Days, and I'm your host, Shanna Sheehy. Today, we're talking about love and relationships on the show. What questions do you have about the loving relationships in your life? Email those questions to us now. That's mail@kidsthesedays.org, and we'll make sure your thoughts are part of the conversation that continues all week long at kidsthesedays.org. I'd like to introduce today's guest. On the phone with us today is Dr. Susan Newman. Dr. Newman is a social psychologist and a best-selling author. She's written 14 books on relationships and parenting. In her writing, she explores how to build strong family bonds and traditions, the keys to friendship, raising only children, grandparenting, and interactions between adult children and their parents and in-laws, all those subjects and others. Dr. Newman has appeared on many national media programs, and her written work has been featured in many well-known publications. She is the stepmother of four children and the mother of one. She lives in New Jersey. Thanks so much for being with us today on Kids These Days, Dr. Newman.
Good to be here.
And Dr. Susan Newman, as I mentioned, we at Kids These Days have gone around and collected some questions from our listeners. Let's take one first from Priscilla.
Hi, this is Priscilla. I live in Anchorage. And one of the things that I'd like to know is, after having really busy lives, how do you and your partner remember who you fell in love with? How do you feed each other's soul? And not just talk about the kids, the tasks that you need to do, the obligations, and just kind of day-to-day mundane things.
So, Dr. Newman, that's a pretty big question, but it's one that I certainly have heard many and many times coming from families that I interact with.
Well, it's true. We get caught up in our children, and we forget we have a partner. There are any number of things you can do. One is to say, okay, every night after the children are in bed, we are going to sit down with each other, and we're going to talk about something else. You can make that a time to have a cup of coffee. You can make that a time to have a glass of wine, just the two of you, and talk about your day, talk about what's bothering you, but make it a rule. It can't be related to the children. It has to be related to the two of you. You can also have date night. You can try to hire a sitter or get the children's aunt or uncle or another relative to stay with them, so that have a once a week date night for most couples is unrealistic, but you can do a once a month date night, and it can be a date afternoon, anything. The other things you want to do are things that make your partner say, "Ooh, my wife or my husband was really thinking about it. She remembered when she went to the grocery store that I only liked vanilla ice cream, but nobody else in the house likes vanilla ice cream, but she bought me vanilla ice cream." You could pick out a DVD, a movie to watch that may not be of interest to you, but watch it anyway with your partner. And, you know, it could be a crime thriller that you really can't stand, but you're going to pretend and sit through it holding your partner's hand the whole time. So it's these little tiny things that keep the marriage together. And I'm not saying it's ever easy, because there was an interesting study recently that you would think that money is the issue that couples argue about the most. Well, it turns out it isn't money, it's the arguments always, or more of them, and an overwhelming number more of them, are about the children. And that's why I say when you're talking to each other and having your coffee at night or tea or what, a glass of milk and cookies, keep the children totally out of it. That will help a lot. And then, of course, you can wear a sexier nightgown and not sleep in your socks. Those things help a lot, too. And then you also want to say I love you as often as possible. Make it a daily mandate in your head. I am going to say I love you once a day. I am going to grab my partner, and I am going to stop her, and I am going to kiss her once a day. You know, these are little things that get lost in the turmoil and the fast pace of raising children, working, trying to get everything done.
It sounds like doing these things deliberately, even if they're very small, can have a bigger impact than one might think.
They absolutely do. They have a bigger impact than if you go out and buy a gift for Valentine's Day. It's the repetition of them, the remembering them, and making part of your daily routine. Because when you don't, it's harder and harder to do them. The years go by, you get into a pattern, and if you're in that pattern, you want to change it as quickly as possible.
And going back to the sexier nightgown and taking off the socks when you crawl into bed idea, I'm wondering, do you hear from couples, once couples have gone from being a couple into being parents of children or a child, you know, your roles change, sometimes your bodies change. How do couples who are parents sort of deal with the changes that happen in the relationship because of this new dynamic of a family? And also, you know, there are changes that happen to us as we age physically, and especially for women when they have babies.
Well, I think women have to adopt the attitude that they're still the same person in a slightly altered body, and think of themselves as still beautiful, as still appealing, as still sensual, because then you project that image to your partner. And women are notorious for saying, I'm too fat, I've lost my waistline, I don't look so good anymore. But if you look at yourself and say, well, you know, maybe I'm altered a little, but I'm still this wonderful, fun, dynamic person, that message will get across. That helps.
Well, since we were talking about how to keep a marriage alive and loving and feed the soul, even after family life has begun, I think we have time for this. Anyone who is currently married or has been married knows that a successful marriage is hard work. Staying married isn't easy, and with current rates estimated at 45 to 50% of all new marriages ending in divorce, reaching another anniversary each year is something to celebrate. Well, Anchorage homesteaders Bernice and Les Kelm recently celebrated their 64th wedding anniversary. They spoke with Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez about how they've been making it work since 1946.
We've been married for 64 years, and we were married in North Dakota. And I was 18 years old, and my husband was 25. And had just come home from, well, a few months before, from World War II. And we came up here a week after we were married. Drove to Seattle, and then got on a plane and flew up. And we shipped all our wedding presents, and there was a boat that went down, and some of it we never got, and we waited till from September to the next April before our car got here. We had shipped a car. So we lived right downtown in Anchorage, so we could ride the bus to work. We both worked out on the base when we first came.
Mr. Kelm, how did you ask Mrs. Kelm to marry you?
Well, I think it just happened.
Did you get down on one knee?
No.
No. How many children did you have together?
We had five, and they all live here. We lost our oldest son 3 years ago, but the others all live here. And all our grandchildren live here except one granddaughter who lives down in Illinois. So we're very fortunate to have our family close to us.
How many grandchildren do you have?
We have six grandchildren and seven great-grandchildren.
Wow. Big family. So when you celebrated your 64th anniversary, was it last year?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
Okay. What did you ever think that you would be married for this long?
Yeah, I did. Partly because we grew up where people didn't get divorces. And I remember just before we got married that I thought about that this decision is for my whole life. And it was.
What would you do when things became difficult?
You know, it's just really hard to say. You just know you have to stick in there, especially after you have children. And so, you know, you just have to work it out. And everybody's got to give a little bit. And I don't believe in 50-50. I think there's always one that has a little more leeway. Somebody has to be the leader in a couple. And I think Les was in the beginning because he was a little older. And I think now I'm probably the leader because he's older and I have to make more decisions.
A lot of give and take over the years.
Yeah, it is. Right. Mm-hmm.
When you would have arguments, well, did you have arguments?
You know, we never really argued. I think often, I don't think our children ever heard us argue. I've thought about asking them that because we didn't argue either. It was kind of cut and dried what was going to happen. And I guess I didn't have a strong personality, so it was easier for me to give up, I think, sometimes.
What do you think is the best way to end an argument then?
Well, somebody has to just quit.
Yeah. What do you think about people now who divorce and have struggles with their marriages? What do you think is going on?
Well, I'm afraid a lot of it is selfishness, you know, and I think it's hard to tell what it is, but a lot of it has to do with just instant, you know. I think they don't get to know each other, and we knew each other's families, and our daughters, that we've talked about, that kind of knew their husbands for quite a while before they got married, and I think that really helps.
Mr. Kelm, what has been your favorite part of being married to your wife?
Well, we got when I was working, I used to get three meals a day, you know. But now I retire, I only need two.
So she fed you well all these years. Yeah. I understand that you homesteaded here in Alaska. Can you tell me about your homestead?
That was underneath the GI Bill of being in the service, you know. Then they give you 5 months to put a habitable home on your place, a source of water supply, and an outhouse. Because out there we had to walk over a mile where the car was to go back and forth to work.
Where was your homestead?
Victor and West 100 off of Diamond Boulevard. Okay.
Mrs. Kelm, what kind of advice would you have for people who are newly married or thinking about getting married?
It's hard to say, but I think you just have to know this is for your life, and to think about how they feel about things, and both have to be giving, mm-hmm. and just have to stick with it, yeah.
Do you think that love, being in love, helps?
I think when you're young, you're really in love, or you think you are. Sometimes I'm not sure. But I think as you grow older, it's a different kind of love, definitely.
How does it change when you get older?
Well, I think you have to take care of each other more, for one thing, and think about how they feel about things. That's really all about it that I can think of. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you reach your 70th wedding anniversary, how will you celebrate?
Oh, golly, I don't know. I'd have to think about that. Mm-hmm. We usually go out for dinner or something on our anniversary, and then the bigger ones we've celebrated, but I'm not sure we'll make 70.
Well, I hope you do. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
That was producer Sarah Gonzalez speaking with Bernice and Les Kelm at their home in Anchorage. They've been married to each other for 64 years. And Dr. Susan Newman, did you feel that any of those pieces of wisdom shared with us just now are particularly important?
Well, yes, I did, actually. First of all, it's an amazing story, all they've been through. She said a couple things that are actually key to a relationship. You know, one was talking about compromise. At some point somebody has to give up. I don't know that somebody has to give up, but you sure do have to compromise in a relationship. You're dealing with two people who on a lot of issues may have different ideas. So I thought that was very key. And in terms of younger people rushing into marriage, she talked about that. Although the marriage rate is dropping, but nonetheless, many people say, oh, I'm in love and they're getting married almost immediately. You do need to know the person you're planning on marrying, and you should think, when you're getting married, this is for life. The chances of a marriage working are much greater if you have spent a considerable amount of time with this person, you really understand this person, and you know their family, because family can be very intrusive and divisive in a marriage. So you want to know about those relatives and who's there. Is the mom on your side? Is the dad on your side? Are they accepting of you? That will help strengthen the marriage. And the other thing she said that I thought was key to relationship, and particularly long-term relationships, that as you grow older, the passionate love you had in the beginning turns into a taking care of each other, and more so a certain amount of respect for the other person. That's what people should really think about when they're going into a marriage, that the passionate love, while in instances remains, but in most marriages, as you get into your 70s and 80s, you do want to have that respect and caring and nurturing side for men as well as women, because you will be taking care of each other.
Well, this is Kids These Days on this listener-supported station. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and today I'm talking with Dr. Susan Newman about love and relationships. And for this program, we've collected listeners' questions. So let's hear another one from James.
Hi, my name is James. My wife and I are thinking about having a family, and I grew up with siblings. And I wanted to hear you discuss the pros and cons between having an only child and having a larger family.
So, Dr. Susan Newman, I know you have written about the case for the only child. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yes, this is a hotly debated topic at all times, often between husband and wife, because, as James said, he grew up with siblings. And the majority of people tend to want, when they're starting their own families, to have a family size that they grew up with, particularly if they loved it. But because of the economy and the fact that in most families women are working, it's often, and the cost of raising children, it's often difficult for couples today to have more than one child. The single child is the fastest growing family unit. And what shocks everybody is the fact that for more than a decade, there have been more single child families than families with two children.
Really?
And that number, yeah, everyone goes, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So while the single child is still very maligned in this world, the myth that single children will be spoiled and lonely and bossy and aggressive and have more imaginary friends, they're really myths. All of that has been disproven. And particularly on the lonely score, which is what concerns parents, when those stereotypes started, children were that was in the 1890s, children were pretty isolated. They lived on farms. They had no one to play with. Today, children are socialized very early. They're put in daycare. They have nursery school. They have kindergarten. So that they're not isolated.
Well, Dr. Newman, I think we have a chance to get to one more question before we take a quick break. So let's hear from Rob.
Hi, my name's Rob. I'm from Anchorage. And I'd like to know, when you have a very strong patriarch or matriarch that holds your family together and keeps the generations in touch with each other, how you deal with the situation when one of them passes away or both of them may pass away, and what can be done to try and rebuild and keep that structure together?
That's a very interesting question, because this happens in so many families. The bonds between the relatives fall apart. The holidays you celebrated, the first few years you have them regularly, and then you skip a year, and then you skip 3 years, and then all of a sudden the traditions have vanished. The way to do that is one person, let me backtrack. The matriarch or patriarch, before they are no longer around, needs to make it clear to his or her children that she wants these traditions to continue. She wants the family to remain close, and that she's counting on her children to do this, to carry on. That carries a ton of weight with offspring. They will want to do it. So that said, if that doesn't happen, or the parents don't do it, someone has to really want to be in charge. And usually there's one person who says, okay, no one else is doing it. I'm going to pick up the role because it's important to me. And if that doesn't happen, if you feel you want the traditions and life to continue as before, call a meeting with your siblings and say, the family isn't together like we used to be. What can we do to keep it together? And maybe divide out tasks, plan a family reunion, see what you can do to, as the person who cares the most, to get everybody to participate. And don't be discouraged if you hear no's from a grouping of your siblings. Just go forward and something will ignite them. Maybe a newsletter that now with the internet, that's easy to do. Just start by spreading news of the family, and somebody's going to care besides you. And the other thing you can do is start new traditions. Sometimes what your parents did just doesn't work anymore because people live far away or for whatever reasons. Try new things. Try, instead of having it at some, having a get-together at somebody's house, try doing a camping out experience, or try having a dinner somewhere where you've never been before. So those are all ways where you can keep the family together once you don't have that key person anymore.
Well, this is Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and today Dr. Susan Newman is answering questions about how to go about tending to the loving relationships in our family lives. We'll hear more from her in the second half of the show. Also coming up, our contributor Jessica Cochran finds out about local resources for families who need support with attachment and bonding issues. And we have some fun in the kitchen with Chef KTD, the first installment of that new feature. So stay with us. We'll be back after this break.
Nothing you can do that can't be done. Nothing you can sing that can't be sung. Nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game. It's easy. Nothing you can make that can't be made. No one you can save that can't be saved. Nothing you can do, but you can learn how to be you in time.
Next time on the program, it's Dads These Days. That's right, Kids These Days has an all-dad panel in the studio. We'll be talking about the ways today's dads get involved and contribute to their families. We'll hear from teens and young men about what it means to be a man in today's world. And we'll learn from a national expert about how manliness is changing in our society. Don't miss Kids These Days next time when the conversation is all about Dads These Days. That's Tuesday at 2 and again at 7 on KSKA FM 91.1. We're back. This is Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy. Today I'm talking with Dr. Susan Newman, who joins us by phone from her home in New Jersey. Dr. Newman is a social psychologist and a best-selling author, and today she's answering your questions about love and relationships in family life. And Dr. Newman, let's do that. Let's go straight to our listeners. We have a question from Will.
Hello, my name is Will, and my question is, if you don't have a great relationship with your parents, how do you repair that relationship for the sake of your children?
You need to take a big gulp and say, my children need to know their grandparents. I want to repair my relationship for the sake of my children, and I'm going to turn the other cheek. I'm going to look the other way. You want to accept that your parents will not be here forever, and let the past be the past, I think, is the key. Approach them. It depends. I don't know what Will's specific situation is. But you just want to say to your parents, let's start anew. And be careful not to slip back into those old arguments, tensions. If they bring it up, you say, we're moving forward. We are not discussing what happened previously. That usually, the point, it sounds like this is very hard to do, but when you realize that grandparents, or probably 99% of grandparents, more than anything want to be with and know their grandchildren, taking the first step is not so hard. It's very unlikely that they will turn you away and say, no, we're not. We don't want to have anything to do with you or your children. That probably will not happen. And if you can get that through your head, it's much easier to pick up the phone or knock on the door and say, you need to know your grandchildren.
Well, Dr. Newman, let's hear, let's have another question. This one comes from Malia.
Hi, I'm Malia, and I dated a guy for 6 weeks, and our relationship totally fell apart because my mom hated him and his mom hated me, and we couldn't find any way to overcome those fights. So I was wondering if you had any advice on how to balance family and relationships and just to resolve conflicts that arise with that.
So what to do when mom hates the new boyfriend?
Oh, mom hates all the new boyfriends or girlfriends. I mean, clearly, as Malia said, neither one of them could make inroads with their parents. Well, in the beginning, you know, as soon as you have an inkling that your mother does not like or your father does not like a boyfriend or girlfriend, I would keep them away, keep the boyfriend or girlfriend away as much as possible, so they don't have that much chance to interact. That will give you, the dating person, it will buy you some extra time to talk about, and this is what you want to do. You want to talk about all this boyfriend or girlfriend's strong points. How wonderfully he treats you, or how upbeat she is. So you're softening, the hard edge that your parent has taken, and you can ask, why do you dislike this person so much? I don't know that you'll always get a straight answer. You'll probably hear, I don't know, I just don't like him, or I don't know, I just don't like her. But also, I would consider a parent's objections pretty seriously. You know, parents sometimes have good vibes, and they may be seeing something you're not seeing. And I'm not saying that parents are always right, but it's certainly worth investigating why they have developed so quickly such a strong dislike for someone you're dating.
Well, let's transition a wee bit here. Did you have a high school sweetheart? Well, maybe you married him or her. Well, we at Kids These Days wondered what teens these days think about love and marriage. So we asked our fearless teen reporter, Aviva Hirsch of the Alaska Teen Media Institute, to go and find out for us.
In Spanish, there are different ways to say, I love you. Te amo is a deep, compassionate love, while te quiero is a phrase you might hear more often among high school students. But are some high schoolers legitimately in love?
I think a lot of times in high school, people use the term love really loosely and not quite appropriately.
For the most part, I think it's just lust.
I don't know, just want to have intercourse with someone, probably.
I don't know. Burst anyone's bubble, but I don't think love can really exist in its full power in high school. I mean, we're kind of too young to really realize the full potential.
It's probably more physical than actually, like, deep.
I've liked someone a lot, but I don't think I ever loved them. No.
There definitely are circumstances where people do find true love in high school. I have a family friend who, they are married now, and they were high school sweethearts.
People think that once you get into high school, you can fall in love with anyone here. And normally, high school relationships don't last because that's kind of like your first love, and then you learn from it. And then there's like few lucky people. I'm one of them who actually have found love in high school, and actually do think I'm in love, and I want to marry the person that I'm in love with right now.
me. I don't take it serious. It just comes. It's just a feeling that I get with different people. And not that many. I only had one girl, and that's just the girl I'm with right now.
I've had a couple different people that I think I've liked really well, but I just recently fell in love with my boyfriend of 7 months, and he's actually away at college right now. But we fell in love over the summer, and we just hung out every day, and I got to know a whole bunch of stuff about him, and everything I know about him, I love about him.
So basically there's this guy, and he drives me crazy in a good way, also in a bad way, because I honestly do not know what he's doing anymore. I'm kind of in love right now.
Which brings us to the age-old question, what is amor?
So being in love with someone to me is not taking your mind off them, like that's all that you think about.
Undying affection for someone, like accepting them for who they are.
Making them happy no matter what.
I think there's just a connection that people feel when they're in love.
It's kind of like the most awful thing in the world, but also like the best thing in the world at the same time. It's very confusing. It's very stressful. That's a good way to put it.
So what do teens think they'll do in the future?
College is the first time that you're really on your own and can figure out who you truly are. So I believe that it is highly possible college can be the first time for a lot of people when they experience true love.
I really thought about it. Probably just gonna, you know, do my thing in college, join a frat house, and go with a lot of girls.
I don't think I want to be alone when I'm older, but I don't know if I'm really the type of person for marriage yet. I can't really think that far ahead.
When I get married, I want to have a fun, spontaneous life with my significant other. I want to know that we can be able to get through anything together, and no matter what, that I can always come and talk to him.
If you're with someone, you shouldn't feel obligated to get married. My parents aren't married, and they've been together for 20 years, and they have 2 kids, and they're happily in love.
I say when I'm 40, I'm married.
I don't know, I guess I probably won't get married until I'm at least like 25 or something.
Old enough to have experienced life and have opportunities available to me, but young enough that if I want to have children when I'm married, that I won't be an old fart as a parent.
With so much to think about, like getting into college, playing sports, and spending time with friends, love can be overwhelming in high school. In reality, we're still kids, only just beginning our journey to find an amazing significant other.
That was Aviva Hirsch reporting for Kids These Days from the halls of West Anchorage High School on what today's teens think about love and marriage. And we have Dr. Susan Newman joining us to talk with us about love and relationships today. And Dr. Newman, so do Anchorage teenagers sound like teenagers you know from other places in the country when they talk about love and marriage?
Absolutely. And what Aviva just said, that they're still kids, is so true. You know, a lot of these high school romances are pure infatuation, or as the young man said, lust. And there, as teenagers, their brains are still developing. They need more time. You know, some of them will absolutely fall in love in high school and marry that person. The majority of them will go on and live their life, maybe go to college, finish college, and really learn, experience life, and learn more about what they want. Their interests change. Teenagers' interests now, when they're in high school, may be very, very different. One young lady said there's too much or so much to think about, and that's really true. And you know, the concept of love, we have it, we're bombarded with it, you know, on television shows, in advertisements, everything, and particularly now as we're pre-Valentine's Day, is geared towards love, and even, you know, throughout the year. So, you know, we're almost telling teens to be in love when they should be just experiencing life and having fun and As someone said, maybe I'll get married when I'm 40. I think that was one of the young men. And the women in the group who said, you know, I want to go out, I want to learn things, I want to experience different people, that's the smart move for high school.
The teens at the beginning were talking about love and whether or not love can happen in high school. So maybe as a closing question for you today, Dr. Newman, is there such a thing as true love?
Oh, absolutely. I have no question that there is such a true love. There is true love, examples of it all over the place. And you may meet him in high school, but not necessarily. You may meet him when you're 60. But there is definitely true love, and it's a bonding and an understanding and an immediately wanting to be with this person all the time. That happens. I believe in true love.
Well, thanks so very much, Dr. Susan Newman, for joining us today on Kids These Days.
My pleasure.
Dr. Susan Newman is a best-selling author and a social psychologist. You can find out more about her and her work at susannewmanphd.com. You can also find her website through ours. That's kidsthesedays.org. And Dr. Newman is working currently on her 15th book. It's titled The Case for the Only Child, Your Essential Guide. And you can find out more information there. So we've been talking today about love and relationships and some of the issues that people have that need to be worked out around those things. But what happens when the biggest problem is that there isn't enough love or a strong relationship early in someone's life? It seems like a no-brainer that forming strong bonds with parents in infancy is important for a child's healthy emotional development. But if it doesn't happen, then what? KTD contributor Jessica Cochran has more.
Tom Lytle is a master's level therapist practicing in Wasilla. He works with children, families, and adults on behavioral and mental health issues, and he's seen what happens when young children don't bond with their caregivers.
When children actually have healthy bonding and attachment with their parents, they can emotionally mature, which complements their intellectual abilities, their IQ. It helps them to be able to realize that the world is a safe place where they can grow up in, that adults are trustworthy, and that their needs are going to be taken care of and provided for, and they have a sense of security and the beginnings of a healthy self-esteem. When healthy bonding and attachment doesn't take place, instead of trust, they have mistrust. They mistrust that their caretakers will provide for them, that they are valuable and important, and that the world is not a safe place. And so they begin to develop a negative, pessimistic worldview. They develop core beliefs that are very self-destructive in themselves, where they begin to live out a pattern that will set them up for suffering for the rest of their life. So a lot of times these kids come from abused and neglected backgrounds. And if they don't get help, they will reduplicate their own childhood upbringing as adults for their children. There's a large percentage that will just reduplicate that system because of the lack of bonding and attachment.
Lytle thinks of it as a continuum. On one end, secure attachment, people who have formed and are able to form healthy attachments to others. At the other, reactive attachment disorder, or RAD. Kids with RAD have lost their trust in adults or never had it in the first place. Their behavior can be extremely frustrating, cruelty to animals, lying, physical violence. Lytle says to help them, you have to work with the whole family.
There's two functions. Number one is to help them learn how to have healthy attachment. So you have to actually work with the system. You want to work with their present primary nurturer, caretaker, and the child itself. And what you want to do is you actually want to recreate in some way and work on what they missed in those early developmental years. Because what we don't gain back there, we don't have the foundation for building on, so you have to go back and somehow help them to relearn how to have healthy trust by, if the child's young, by doing some things where parents or the foster parents or whoever's providing the care learns to build healthy trust the way you would as you begin with an infant. Think of it this way. Children don't have healthy trust. Maslow's hierarchy of need is, you know, at the very bottom, food, clothing, and shelter. Children who have reactive attachment disorder live at that very basic level because at some point, the very basic needs went unmet. And so they live in a constant state where they're hypervigilant, where their needs are not going to be met, they're unimportant, and so they're constantly living in a state of something bad's going to happen to me. And so you have, first of all, you create a structure that they can trust by working with the adults to build a very healthy, safe structure. Here's what time every time we go to bed. Here's what time we get up. Here's what time we eat our meals. I'm always here for you. And we build a structure that the child can begin to put some trust in. And then we begin to work with the child and parent to build what I call transferal trust, which is I'm going to trust you even when I'm nervous and afraid and I would normally have to react and, by acting out to take control of the situation, but I'm going to start trusting in you because I know you have my best interest at heart. And that takes time for that to take place, but ultimately that's where you're wanting to move, is to build this healthy sense of trust with their caregiver.
Lytle uses lots of different techniques, teaching kids what healthy touch is and parents how to soothe with touch, helping parents to stay calm so children can attune to their moods and calm down. Lytle says play and positive experiences are an important part of it.
Children who are who have maladjusted and didn't have healthy bonding, there's neurons that actually get pruned off in the brain. These neurons have certain functions. The neurons that get pruned off are the neurons that have that teach a child to have compassion, empathy, and care and concern for others. So if those neurons are pruned off and they lack that ability now, if they don't get help, what they're being hardwired for is antisocial traits, which is not healthy in our population. They don't care about, they don't have a conscience. They don't care about others. Everything's about themselves. And so what we want to do is the brain's a remarkable organ. Just like a stroke victim, that part of the brain dies where the stroke occurred, but it can rewire around that. Our brain can rewire around those neurons that's been pruned off, and a child can gain a lot of what was lost back through therapy. It has to be more than just talk therapy because talking's not going to rewire. It has to be emotional experiences. And so your therapy needs to be very experientially based, that the child has positive emotional experiences in the midst of therapy. And it slowly over time helps build around those neurons that were pruned off in the child's brain.
All this attachment therapy stuff is a bit controversial. Early on, attachment therapists used methods like hold therapy, forcing kids to be held close, that are now deemed by most, including Lytle, to be harmful, not helpful. Search attachment therapy online and you'll find competing advocacy groups, one that calls attachment therapy quackery. But if you ask Eleanor Oakley, attachment disorders are real and parents need help with them. She is one of the co-founders of Alaska Attachment and Bonding Associates.
There were three of us that actually started the organization, and the other two were adoptive parents of two children that had reactive attachment disorder, and I was a foster parent of a seven-year-old that had reactive attachment disorder. And so we've learned firsthand what the problems are, and when we sought help, there wasn't any help for us, so we decided to form an organization where we could at least bring information to people who are experiencing the same type of things that we were going through.
Oakley is now the volunteer CEO of the organization. The group has a lending library and offers education workshops for parents and mental health providers on attachment disorders, and mostly just tries to offer support and resources to parents at the end of their ropes, parents like Jessica Beagley.
It's just like the mother who was on Dr. Phil, who's now being charged with child abuse. We just didn't know what to do. And that mother didn't know what to do. If she had known we were here in the state of Alaska, and she's from Anchorage, but that mother, you could just see in her eyes the desperation she felt, and I felt so bad for her. I didn't condone what she did to her son, her adopted son, but I can understand that she was at her wit's end and not knowing what to do and trying to change this child's behavior. The child's behavior wouldn't change with the types of things she was doing, because remember that hard wiring? He felt in his mind that he would die if he didn't do what he was doing. And that's hard for us to understand, but in a child who has reactive attachment disorder, who has changes in the brain, it's a hard thing for him to change, and a hard thing for him to give up the control that he would need to do to be able to trust adults again. So I can understand her desperation, and I really feel for her. And it's parents like that we want to reach out to, and others who have, you know, mildly affected children, because a child's brain can be changed, but it takes a lot of work, and it takes a professional who knows what he's doing. So that's why we're here.
AABA is an Alaskan statewide organization, but Oakley says lately they've been getting calls from all over the country as families struggle to understand how to work with their kids. I'm Jessica Cochran.
There are lots of links about reactive attachment disorder and attachment therapy at our website, kidsthesedays.org. Well, it's time to lighten the mood a little bit. Today on Kids These Days, we are debuting the first segment of a new series we're calling Chef KTD. Liz Madsen, sous chef at the Crow's Nest, and her 5-year-old son Aiden show KTD's Sarah Gonzalez how to whip up a sweet Valentine's Day treat that both kids and adults will love, fruit dipped in chocolate ganache.
We are going to be making ganache so that we can dip fruit in it, or whatever you want. You can put bacon in it if you like.
Okay. And so ganache is mostly chocolate?
Ganache is just cream and chocolate. It's basically a fancy fudge sauce.
Ganache, I haven't made ganache ever.
In the mixing bowl, I'm just going to put in, this is a 77% dark chocolate. You could use like a semi-sweet baking chocolate if you want. And then this is a 58% chocolate. So this is like your basic sweetened chocolate. Like you can just buy chocolate chips at the grocery store for the large portion of it, and then you can use the baker's bars for the other portion. It's 2 pounds of chips, which is the lighter stuff, to 6 ounces of the darker.
Okay.
And then we have a quart of heavy cream and 1 cup of corn syrup, and you're just gonna bring that to a boil and pour it in here and mix it, and that's it.
All right, that sounds really easy.
Super easy.
And then what do you do with the ganache when it's finished?
You can dip stuff in it, you can fill cakes with it, you can coat cakes with it,
or you can put candy in it.
You can put candy in it. Yeah.
Candy in it. Mm-hmm. So on that plate over there on the counter, Aiden, what's on that plate? What do I see?
Cherries and marshmallows and strawberries and pineapple.
So, Liz, is this something that people can do with their kids at home? That's pretty easy.
Absolutely. It's very easy. It's nothing more than bringing cream to a boil and pouring it over chocolate. And you can use a mixer like I have here, or you can do it by hand. Either way, and you just let it sit.
And you're pouring the boiling cream. It just barely boiled, and now she's pouring it into a mixer with all of the chocolate.
That's it. the hot cream just melts all the chocolate, and then you just mix it until it's emulsified, and it's nice and shiny, and that's all.
How do you know when to stop?
When it's all mixed in, it'll become nice and dark and shiny once all the chocolate is melted. Multiple uses for it. You can dip stuff in it, fill things. There's a lot of different things you can do with it. So it's really easy. It's one of those things that's like four ingredients.
Is it all done?
That's all done. That's it.
How long did that mix for? Like a minute or two?
Yeah, maybe a minute.
Okay, so now it's hot and it's mixed. Do you have to wait for it to cool down, or do you want to dip the fruit when it's still warm?
You can do it when it's still warm. That way it's nice and liquid. And eventually it'll cool to room temperature, and it'll probably stay for, I don't know, and you could keep it in the freezer or keep it in the refrigerator for up to a month probably before it'll go bad.
What else could you dip in this?
Graham crackers, bananas, bacon.
And cherries.
Cherries. Mm-hmm. All kinds of fruit. Mm-hmm. It's good for
like a party, if you're cherries.
Like a quick dessert, you know. You can just like have it on a buffet or something if you're going to throw a party. It's really easy. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, everybody can make their own. It's interactive. They can create like, oh, I like pineapple or I like strawberry. So you get to basically make your own dessert.
Well, that is just lovely. And so easy.
I found a marshmallow one. I have to try a lot of them so they taste good.
Yes, make sure that we did it right.
Yummy.
That was Chef KTD Liz Madsen and her son Aiden preparing chocolate ganache for dipping fruit, an easy and delicious treat you can make for Valentine's Day or any time of the year. Want more details? Go to kidsthesedays.org for the recipe and to see photos of the finished product. And one KTD listener asked, and we answer. We'll have other ideas on our website as well for ways you and your kids can celebrate Valentine's Day with projects that show love and affection, but don't fall into the trap of being over-commercialized. Check out that list, www.kidsthesedays.org. That's all the time we have today on Kids These Days. Thanks for being with us. The conversation continues at our website, kidsthesedays.org. You can listen to this program again and share it with others. Follow us through Facebook and Twitter and contact us by email. That's mail@kidsthesedays.org. We want to hear from our listeners, so keep the comments coming. Next time on Kids These Days, we're hearing from Dads These Days. We'll have an all-dad in-studio panel, and we'll take a look at contemporary male roles in family life today. And put this in your calendar. Kids These Days is coming to you live in the community. This one-time event is called New to School, and we'll be getting the lowdown about school options for families in Anchorage. Come be a part of the audience and go to the school information fair held afterwards. Kids These Days is working in partnership with Trinity Church for this event on February 19th. Get all the details at kidsthesedays.org. Jessica Cochran reported from Anchorage for today's show. Aviva Hirsch brought us Teenage Voices today, along with the help of the Alaska Teen Media Institute. Sarah Gonzalez is this show's producer, and she's today's technical director, too. Mind Over Matthew composed and performed our theme music. I'm Shanna Sheehy. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
The ideas, opinions, and commentary you hear on Kids These Days are those of the hosts, guests, and contributors, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of its funders or broadcast partners. The Content Producers Guild is solely responsible for what you hear on the program. Kids These Days is made possible by a generous grant from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. Kids These Days is produced in partnership with KSKA 91.1 FM Anchorage, KRUA, and the UAA Department of Journalism and Public Communications.